When television stars do bad real-life things, can they recover? Let's chat about it on Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
Headline-making actions by popular culture figures is no new thing. From contentious public divorces to drunk driving arrests to private rants caught on tape, Hollywood figures are no stranger to the heat of the spotlight. But at what point do personal actions of the famous begin to do irreparable harm to their careers and legacy? I'm Joe Lee with pop culture ambassador Bob Thompson, director of the Blair Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. In the news now, Bill Maher drops the N-word on his show. Kathy Griffin poses with a prop of the severed head of the POTUS. And a man once referred to as America's favorite dad, Bill Cosby, has a sexual assault trial going on right now. Bob, neither of us are public relations fixers, and it might be nice to have someone like that on today's show. But we can discuss the potential impact of these events on these actors' careers based on precedent. A lot of folks have done some things, have been able to recover. Maybe a few haven't.
Yeah, well, it all depends on, A, what you did, B, how you handle after you get caught doing it, and C, who you are. So if you're Paris Hilton and you get caught with a sex tape, it can make your career. It did, essentially. I suppose if you were Tom Hanks, known for being a long-married good guy, and he got caught with a sex tape with somebody else, that could be really, really damaging. Mm-hmm. David Letterman, when he got blackmailed for his indiscretions, came right out and confessed it, and that was it, because the other thing there was not only did he confess it well, but nobody ever thought David Letterman was a perfect guy. He never presented himself. If you're one of these people who are constantly talking about family values and all this kind of thing, and then you get caught in the very thing that you're complaining about, those can be damaging. So even the same acts, I think, different things can happen depending on who you are, with a couple of exceptions. I suppose with O.J. Simpson, that was going to be a hard one to get away from in any context.
Yeah. And then you look at someone like Mel Gibson with a anti-Semitic rant. Turns out wasn't completely out of the realm for him to come back, but it did take a long time. That one was that was a pretty significant one.
That was a really significant, and that one kind of surprised me, because we had that dead to rights. There was no question of whether that was Mel or not, and that was the kind of thing that is pretty hard to dance around. I mean, we heard him saying it. And not only has he come back, but he's come back in a big way. He's got work that's being nominated and recognized. An interesting comparison would be Michael Richards from Seinfeld. TMZ had that tape of him at a comedy club just going off on an audience member using the N-word over and over. And to this day, and that's been a long time, I still can't watch Seinfeld reruns without, whenever he comes in, immediately hearing that. I mean, that baggage, I think, hangs over him in a significant way. Now, it's hard to make a comparison. His career was not exactly setting the world on fire at that point anyway. So I think he had two things to get back from. One, to somehow do something after Seinfeld, and then that, I think, really kind of put a nail in it.
Yeah, that was a big one for me. I don't think I've watched Seinfeld, a Seinfeld rerun since then. That one bothered me a great deal. Much like, I think, if I were Jewish, I think the Mel Gibson thing might have the same effect on me, though I have to say a Mel Gibson movie comes on today, and I do cut it off. It's not like I'm holding anything against him, but it's just a feeling there that doesn't make me want to watch. Of the three most recent headlines, I think the Bill Maher situation, to me, is the least grievous.
We'd love to have you work in the fields with us. Work in the fields?
That's part of that. That's...
Senator, I'm a house nigga. No, it's a joke.
And I only say that because, not that I'm diminishing the use of the word. I already said that, you know, I was pretty upset with Kramer from Seinfeld. But this is Bill Maher's thing. He's politically incorrect. He couches himself in that context with his career, his show. The use of the word, while not Joe Lee approved, was of a different context than shouting it in anger at someone in an audience. So to me, I don't think he sees a lot of damage from this.
Yeah, okay. You are right. The Michael Richards thing was not only shouting, but talking about having a fork stuck in. I mean, that was an aggressive, violent, threatening kind of thing. This is a much more historically based, I mean, as offensive as this was to an awful lot of people, it was an intellectually offensive joke. But that was maybe part of the problem, too, is that he was making a joke based on the typologies of slavery in a place where that was completely not the context of what they were talking about. And I think that's why some people hear that and they think, okay, I'm not sure whether he should get a pass on this and it was that. But then the way he did that, completely out of what the conversation was about, I think was giving some people problems as well. The other thing, I think you're absolutely right that this is what Marr does, so we kind of expect it of him. But it also could be a situation that sooner or later what Marr does gets a straw that breaks the back.
Mm-hmm.
And this one looked for a while like it might be it. HBO is stuck with them, at least as far as I know. They're still sticking with him. So he probably will get through this one. But he's got an awful lot of people for a long time who have been complaining about his tirades against Muslims, his tirades against, we know his feeling on religion in general. He's not exactly the poster boy for women either.
Yeah. The Kathy Griffin incident to me is a bit more tenuous. She's at best a C-level actress, and so it's not a difficult thing for a network, a company, a movie producer to say, you know, she's hands off. She's not a hot property. It's not a tough decision to make. And so in that light, I think it might be a little tougher for her to get through this severed Trump head incident.
It's going to be harder for Kathy Griffin to get through this to, you know, become a big star. But the easier thing for her is to make a comeback. She doesn't have as far to go.
Mm-hmm.
When someone like Mel Gibson does this, he was a superstar.
That's a longer fall.
Right. So and Cosby, of course, is the extreme case of that. Kathy Griffin is, you know, whether or not this will totally destroy her career, she probably will continue to be able to get bookings after a period of time of detox from this. I think it would be very difficult. I can't imagine any big network giving her a sitcom at this point. But then again, no big network had given her a sitcom before this happened. Bill Maher's was off the cuff. It was live.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it down after it was live. Kathy Griffin, of course, was a premeditated, and they even showed a making of before they put it on. So that's another problem there. And then after it came on, she made an apology, which was pretty good in the apology department. I mean, it sounded sincere. She completely didn't blame it on anybody else. But then a few days later, she did a 32-minute press conference with her lawyer that didn't take away the apology, but it essentially got into a lot of the reasons why she did it. And throughout that press conference, she was doing bits. She actually prepared stand-up for the press conference. And I know you and I aren't public relations people, but if you've just gotten in trouble for doing what Kathy Griffin did, going on a press conference after your apology and doing comedy is probably the last thing in the world you want to be.
I think I'm going to be honest, he broke me. He broke me. He broke. And then I was like, no, this isn't right. It's just not right. And I apologized because that was the right thing to do and I meant it.
Okay, so that wasn't the apology. That was the press conference.
That was the press conference.
Yeah,
right.
The apology was actually very sincere, the kind that probably would have been scripted for her and good to deliver. Then she gets into this other thing where she becomes the victim of him. And I have to give her credit. During that 30 minutes, she makes some very good points, but completely not what she was trying to do at that point.
It's going to be a tough one. It'll be interesting to see if, again, she's she's at the bottom, but she's a C-level Hollywood type person. So we'll see if she can even climb back up.
If she could make it onto her own show about D-list celebrities.
Mrs. McManus finally delivered. After being in labor for 30 hours, brought her into the room, thought we'd have big trouble, but popped it out just like toast. I'm telling you, all I had to do was just sit there in a crouch, just like Johnny Bench. I didn't. Who's in trouble now?
Theodore.
Oh, good, because I thought it was me.
This is a different one. This is a different situation. You're talking an icon. You're talking someone who is much a part of American television history, African-American history, movie-making history. This is a true icon of popular culture in America. He's at the end of his career, though he was doing, up until many of these allegations came out, still doing some stand-up touring. But he's more in legacy setting and protection mode now. So it's not a matter of can he come back. It's a matter of can he survive, can his legacy survive the outcome of this trial?
And I think the answer to that is his legacy now is the first line is what's going on here, regardless of what happens on this trial, I think. You ask a college student now who, believe it or not, many of have never sat through an entire episode of The Cosby Show, and you say Bill Cosby, and they think of the whole, you know, New York Magazine cover and the accusations and all of that. They don't know who Fat Albert is. They don't even know what that show was. So, and you're right, this is a big one. I mean, I guess we still throw around names like Fatty Arbuckle, but this guy was sitting on the top. He rescued a network in the early 80s. NBC was in third place. Cosby essentially made must-see TV happen, which went on for 20 years. And it gets more complicated because he played this character who was the perfect model of American fatherhood, of American manhood, of American everything. And to have that distance fall, those stories told about that guy who we thought of as that character, was really a problem. But we still, I think, have to remember, and it's, I guess, all throughout these conversations, we have to say alleged, though there is some stuff in depositions that he did talk about. So it's not all alleged. But I think we have to be careful that we don't totally erase what this guy did, because as despicable as what he's accused of is, and we don't for a minute want to downplay that, he did for American entertainment some really, really important things. You know, people like to play that Jackie Robinson game. Who's the Jackie Robinson of this? Who's the Jackie Robinson of that? If you're looking at American television, you know, maybe you'd say Billy Daniels, maybe you'd say Nat King Cole, but I think the Jackie Robinson of American TV was Bill Cosby. He comes out with I Spy in the late 60s, and he's not playing some comic. He's not singing and dancing. He's a leading man, romantic lead, attractive young guy. His character went to Princeton University. I mean, that was a big, big deal. And that was just getting started. He then did the Bill Cosby Show, comedy in the early 70s, which did a lot of interesting things, Fat Albert, and then 5 years number one on The Cosby Show. That work, that legacy, I think still needs to be taught in TV history classes. I do teach it. Cosby is the only guy that in my whole history of television, we watch three of his shows. I don't think anybody else has that. But now, every time I screen one of those, I have to preface it with what amounts to a contextualized apology. And that's a really sad story.
It is. The Cosby Show was not only a hit, but it was, you know, it was very important in not only in American television history, but in presenting African-American culture. Up to that point, we were looking at shows like Sanford and Son, Good Times, The Jeffersons. This was the first show to come along that showed African-American family with two professional parents, well-reared children, living in an upwardly mobile neighborhood. These were different and important images for certain segments of our population, me included, as a young man, to see represented on television. And so you're right, the legacy is deep. We can't ignore it. But human nature, you know, tells me that folks are going to have that reaction that I have when a Seinfeld episode comes on. I think particularly if there is a conviction, I think the legacy is doomed, I'm sad to say.
I think you're right. There still will be a history of Cosby, but the thing he will be most well known for is going to be this. And it gets even more complicated when we see how that whole thing, I mean, all that time when these women had been making these accusations and no one was listening, and what finally got this going again, Hannibal Buress, of all things. I mean, who saw that coming?
Yeah.
That the guy that would ultimately knock the first domino down, that would finally get people to start paying attention to these things, was Hannibal Buress complaining about how Cosby, whose idea, as you just pointed out very nicely, was about this good, a family that's the opposite of dysfunctional, you know, that's upwardly mobile and all that. But then Cosby started trying to sort of turn that into a political philosophy, you know, don't wear your pants so low, don't talk like this and all that kind of thing. And that then began to send ripples across communities that you normally would have expected to be his allies, like fellow comedians. And the whole story has just filled with the strangest, saddest, tragic sorts of details.
You know, you have to wonder, too, I don't know if this took place maybe 15, 20 years ago. Does it have the same energy behind it that it does today, given modern technology, given the internet, social media? I mean, the memes that are out there floating around, it's just going to live forever. The images are constantly in your face, and it's not the kind of thing that you can get away from. Given all the news coverage, all the internet stories that are done, the memes that people are posting, the discussions that people are having, public discussions on the internet, in social media, it just has legs that just keep going and going and going.
No, you're certainly right about that. The other thing, though, when we say what would this have been like 20 years ago, the sad thing is that this was happening 20 years.
It was happening 20
years. Go back that long. And it wasn't as though he was he wasn't confessing to whatever, but he was doing it in his comedy, that Spanish Fly bit that everybody is now turned up and looked at. One of the reasons that allowed all this terrible stuff to happen is that that was considered appropriate material for a comedy bit, that you would drug a woman called crazy on top of it. And I think there, if you really want to find the ground zero, the smoking gun of all of this, he felt free to do that. People felt free to laugh at it. A record company felt free to release it. And it's what's at the bottom of all of this kind of stuff.
It'll be interesting to see. It's a bit of an American tragedy to me. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. When we come back, it's our invitation to binge. You're listening to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee, along with Bob Thompson, and it's time for your invitation to binge. Bob, you want to invite us to watch what?
It's a show that hadn't been on for very long. As a matter of fact, as of its return this summer, there were only 19 episodes in its two seasons, and that's The Carmichael Show. Gerard Carmichael, stand-up comic, doing a show that's kind of about his own life. And in many ways, the parents of this show are The Cosby Show, which it very much resembles in a lot of ways. It's a nice family that's healthy. They love each other, good family. And the other parent is All in the Family, which used to was famous for doing its, you know, issue of the week and relevance and all that kind of thing. And in the 19 episodes of its first two seasons, it's done episodes on gentrification, Black Lives Matter, religion, guns, Muslim neighbors, depression, social media and its problems, an episode on Trump. But probably it's best known so far with an episode called Fallen Heroes, and it's about the Cosby issue. And it is a half-hour sitcom that essentially has the conversation we just had, but it's way more funny than anything we said. And that's not easy to make that subject funny. And I think they do it with taste and grace. And it's about this family who, you know, Cosby was important to them. And then this story happens, and Gerard comes home, and he's managed to get tickets for a Cosby performance. Cosby was still performing for a long time after this happened. His girlfriend, of course, goes completely ballistic, and then they have to have a whole discussion about it.
This is exciting. We haven't been out in a long time.
Who are the tickets for?
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby? Bill Cosby? Bill Cosby?
Bill Cosby.
It was one of the best single episodes of a sitcom I'd seen in a long time, and it reminded me of the pilot episode of The Cosby Show. It was so meticulously done, it was so funny, and in many ways, you can see in that show, Cosby's torch has been passed to Jerrod Carmichael, and Jerrod Carmichael had no other choice but to then torch Cosby in it, because that's now what mm-hmm. these kinds of shows are about. Anyway, they're almost all really fine episodes, and it's only 19, so you can binge it quickly.
I don't think I've seen an episode, so I'm going to dive into that one.
Oh, good fun.
My invitation to binge, I'm going to take a totally different approach to this thing and go away from the subject matter at hand. In light of all the cyber spying activity going on these days, I invite you to check out, if you haven't, Mr. Robot. The acclaimed USA TV network series, now headed for its third season. The show stars Rami Malek as a young antisocial computer programmer named Elliot, who works as a cybersecurity engineer by day and a vigilante hacker by night, hell-bent on bringing multinational companies to their knees.
What I'm about to tell you is top secret, a conspiracy bigger than all of us. There's a powerful group of people out there that are secretly running the world. I'm talking about the guys no one knows about, the guys that are invisible. The top 1% of the top 1%, the guys that play God without permission.
Of course, he's not just a tech. The show is full of mystery, intrigue, thrills, and has some outstanding performances and awards to its credit, including an Emmy, Golden Globe, and a Critics' Choice. I love this show. It is weird.
It is very weird. And when it came out, it was one of those shows that, you know, it was out for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden, everybody was talking about Mr. Robot. This thing, in this world now where we've got all these shows, since we started this conversation, mm-hmm. Netflix has released 10 shows probably. This one broke through the noise. It got first season nominated for all these awards, won a bunch of them. It became a thing. And that first season was exquisitely executed.
Yes.
And you're right. The writing was brilliant. The performances, the whole just feel and style of it was so creepy.
It's culturally resonant, given today's cyber security climate.
That's right. It was a perfect show for its time. Then season two came out. And depending on who you talk to, it went in some odd directions. I actually really liked season two. Do you remember that episode they did that was the first, like, 15, 17 minutes was done in 80s, 90s sitcom style?
Yes, they
had the Full House mm-hmm. type opening. There was a laugh track.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same, Alf, I think, made an appearance, or was that just my hallucination?
No, he was in there.
But there's this body in the car, and mm-hmm. there's people burning each other with, it was so Mr. Robot. It also shows that this stuff is coming from, you know, now we've got HBO doing this, AMC, FX. This was USA. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're getting so many places that are coming out with these really, really extraordinarily interesting programs. And yeah, Mr. Robot's a good choice. Yeah. I would.
I'm not sure if he was the character Elliot has been officially diagnosed, but he appears to be schizophrenic. I don't want to ruin any plot themes or anything for you if you haven't seen it, but that is pretty significant in the sort of weirdness of the program.
Oh, very much so. He is one of the most kind of unusual characters, and we're seeing more like that afterwards. I think his character has already begun to spread across the cultural landscape.
And one of my favorite sort of outstanding performers from that is Portia Doubleday, who plays his childhood friend Angela. There are a lot of great characters, a lot of great actresses, but I do love her performance in this series. I'm not sure where they can go or how many seasons it has left with this story arc. Can you predict?
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, so many of these programs, I think one of the reasons they can be as good as they are is in the old days, you had to churn out, you know, first 36 episodes per season, and then it settled into about 22 for several decades. These can have shorter seasons, you can do more complex things, and they don't seem to be paying as much attention to the fact that this has got to go on for, you know, 10 seasons or 12 seasons, which is what it did in the old days. So I think probably a lot of these places are figuring this out as they go along. And now, of course, there's also the option with these anthology series that you can kind of push reset. There would be no reason on the same order of what Fargo is doing, or mm-hmm. certainly what American Crime Story and mm-hmm. American Horror Story are doing. You could keep the lead actors, and you could completely put them in different kinds of situations and roles if mm-hmm. you wanted to.
Okay. Thanks for listening to Pop Life, a production of WAER Public Media. Big thanks to our producer, Kevin Kloss. Leave a comment about today's show on the Pop Life Facebook page. And if you want more Pop Life, listen on demand at WAER.org or subscribe to the podcast for automatic delivery. I'm Joe Lee, and on behalf of Bob Thompson, thanks for listening.